Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today John Wexler, who's the VP of Enrollment Management at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, also known as RPI, in beautiful Troy, New York. John, so great to have you here today. How are you?
I'm doing great, John, and thanks for the opportunity to be here.
It is our pleasure. Now, everybody knows that RPI has such great programs in comp sci, mad science, all kinds of engineering, architecture, and that's just to name a few. But John, what is it that you think about RPI that makes it so appealing for so many students to want to apply and ultimately attend?
Oh, John, thanks for the question. I think what makes Rensselaer RPI is a very unique institution. Let me give you some stats. We're the oldest technology university in the United States. We're celebrating our 200th anniversary, our bicentennial. Wow. Big deal. And it's a lot of fun for the students on campus to take in. I know they're part of a great, rich history. There are 37 tier one research private universities in the United States. We're one of them. Wow. So of all the universities, there's only 37 research one. What does that mean? It means a high level of research. We do over 100 million in research. Now, what makes us unique there is we're 85% undergrad enrollment. Wow. So that means a student, and I don't care at what school it's in. We have five schools. It could be engineering, could be business, could be architecture, could be our humanities, it's arts and social sciences, or the sciences, has an opportunity to do research at any given time. Most times we have students starting at the second term of their freshman year all the way through. So what that does is it provides, we have about 1,000 students doing research at Rensselaer at any given time. Considering we have an undergrad population of about 6,500, that's phenomenal. It also gives you an idea of the access our students have to top-tier faculty. We don't have TAs or RAs with our students. They're getting the real deal in the classroom. And those relationships, whether it be research or asking for internships and co-ops when they go outside and getting some direction, or just being able to talk with their faculty about areas they're interested in exploring, provides a great opportunity. I think the other thing that RPI has been well known for is what we call low walls. I think what makes Rensselaer unique is the ability to go between schools, between departments, and do cross-study. And there's not a lot of territorial by the faculty. They embrace that. Bob Zemsky wrote about this in his book about 20 years ago. It's just, and I think everybody's kind of copied us, but we're the real deal in that area in regards to giving students a great opportunity across the whole landscape of all the programs that we have. Plus, when students do go, I think what companies, organizations, grad schools find is that, look, Rensselaer is not easy. We're not claiming it is, but once the students go through it, they are totally prepared for going into the real world, whether it be on the graduate side or the job side. But I would also say it's not cutthroat. I think one of the great things is someone who walks around campus and goes into the student union is you see the camaraderie between the students. You know, what ends up happening in the evening is students move tables together to do studying in the dining halls, in the student unions and those type of places from that standpoint, because they're kind of all in it together, you know, from that mindset. And that allows them to learn from each other.
Well, that's a great overview. I love how you talked about the fact that it's the oldest technology university in the United States at about 200 years old, which is awesome. And of course, your students love being a part of such a rich tradition. Your undergraduate population of about 6,500 students, a lot of cross-study opportunities where the professors and the students embrace it. You talked about the fact that it's not cutthroat and there's a lot of collaboration. So it certainly sounds like a great place for anyone and everyone that's there. Obviously, RPI is known, John, for its strong emphasis on STEM, but could you highlight any unique academic programs or interdisciplinary opportunities? I know you mentioned some, but if you could mention more that set RPI apart from other institutions.
Yeah, I think, well, we'll talk about a number of things. One, you know, a student can do a major and minor, but one, two things I wanted to highlight. One, we have what's called the accelerated BS/MS program. And so what students can do is they can come in and in 4 years get an undergrad degree. Let's just say it's engineering. Let's say it's civil engineering, just using it as an example. And then they could, and then in their fifth year, in their grad, they could do a grad program, get a master's degree from our school in management and something like supply chain management.
Wow.
Two unique aspects there. One, no standardized test. Two, they're saving a year. And the big one is we do for the, for students, that are, and it's a very seamless process because it's internal to internal. We talked about the low walls. One of the unique aspects with that is that they get 50% off tuition. Wow. And our undergrad and grad. So one thing you'll say about Rensselaer, we're very transparent. So the student will know up front, okay, if I stay that fifth year, here's my cost. But then again, we have demonstrated most times students can get about a 10 to 15% increase in their job placement, salary wise, and positions. The other thing that we've just unveiled last April 5th is we are the first university in the United States to have a quantum computer on campus. We have an IBM, we have a new IBM quantum computer. You can go online and take a look at it, or obviously you can come on the campus and see it. It's right in the heart of campus. It's actually in our chapel, which is quite fitting for RPI, which is also our computer lab. But what is going to be unique about that is no department, no school owns that quantum computer. That computer is going to be able to be used for research and classwork and work across the campus. And so the accessibility, going back to what we talked about being at an undergrad primarily institution, we have great grad programs, but we're 85% undergrad, is that unlike at other schools where if you had a system like that, computer like that, it would probably be for a certain doctoral program and a certain set of students. Virtually every student's going to have the opportunity to do that. And just an example being, we out of nowhere, we have a new quantum computer club, not surprising, already has 200 members in it. And in those 200 members, they have an academic advisor. So they're going to be able to have access to it because the academic advisor can provide them the entree depending on what they're interested in doing. So those are some unique aspects that goes across the curriculum. I think another thing that gets underreported or noticed is about 35% of our students come in with a music interest. They may not be music majors, but they have that in their background. We have a phenomenal music program in the sense that it's a major. We have an orchestra that has played at Carnegie Hall. The head of that, we're a Steinway school, which means you have to have a number of actual Steinways on campus. Not too many schools have that. And we also have music labs, practice studios, where your students can record and do all those type of things. And once again, it allows students, what we want students to do is bring all their interests to the university. We want to continue that, building their interests and passion. So maybe they're majoring in engineering, but that's no reason they should stop keeping the passion about music or theater or about other things that they're doing. And I think sometimes it gets under noticed, the great resources we have on campus for those students.
Well, that's terrific. I appreciate the fact that you mentioned that because RPI is known, as we said earlier, as a STEM school, but you talked about the fact that you're really rich in arts education, particularly in music. So again, we appreciate that. And you talked about your amazing accelerated programs. You're the first to have a quantum computer and a club to support it. But more important, I think, is the fact that it is to be used across your campus, emphasizing again your accessibility to all, as opposed to, okay, we have this amazing piece of machinery and we're only going to keep it for one program. Not true at RPI, where again, it's accessible to all across your campus. You also mentioned, John, that RPI places a strong emphasis on collaboration, and your retention rate, by the way, is one of the highest in the country. So
sure.
How does the institution foster a sense of community and collaboration amongst its students, both academically and socially, while keeping them happy and wanting to return?
I think, you know, it's not easy, and it takes a lot of work. And it's, I give credit. We've created something. Let's start off with orientation. We created something called Navigating Rensselaer and Beyond, and where freshmen come onto campus about, let's say, a week before the classes begin, and then we take them off campus. They could be Habitat for Humanity. They could be backpacking. They could be horse riding, you know, whitewater rafting. They pick their areas of interest. And what I love about it is, think of it this way. You're usually going to have a number of groups when you come to campus as a freshman, which everybody's nervous. You're going to have your roommate and the people on your hall. And then you're going to have maybe the people you're in your classes with. Well, now you have a whole other group because you're meeting these students who have similar interests to yours that you may not have come into contact with maybe till later on at your time at Rensselaer. And what we have found is that the students that participate, which is a high percentage, in the Rensselaer NRB, Navigating Rensselaer and Beyond, they stay in contact. These are their new friends because they have similar passions. And what they do is they bring other friends in. Because if you're a business major, you're a management major, and I'm an electrical engineering major, but we have a passion for whitewater rafting or skiing or something, and we met during the first week before classes began, what we're going to do is we're going to bring our friends in from our area and get to know more people. And the more people you know, I mean, the data says it, you know, students decide if they're going to stay or leave probably within the first 8 weeks. You know, I look at it before Thanksgiving break. I really believe that if you before Thanksgiving break, students decide for a lot of factors, but obviously social is a big one of them. On the academic side, we make sure we have a class dean on campus. So that dean is part of the class, and that's someone that the students can go to if they're having issues on campus and anywhere. The other one is in regards to peer tutors. Peer tutors are fantastic. We don't just throw anybody out there. I actually have a friend of mine whose daughter is a freshman. She will be a peer tutor next year. Mm. And he gave me the rundown of what she had to do to be a qualify as a peer tutor. And she's excited about it. She wanted to do it. And obviously she's doing great academically. She's on the science side peer tutor. And I think it breaks down barriers, it comfort level, relatability. And these are usually sophomores. They're not seniors. So they can remember where these students were just a year ago. Their classmates were just a year ago. Oh, I had Dr. So-and-so. Here's what he likes or she likes. You know, oh, that you're over, you know, those type of things. And I think we're trying to lower the anxiety. You got to remember, the hardest part is these kids are all rock stars. They were rock stars in their school. They are phenomenal. And you know, many of them may not have ever gotten a B, you know, so they get a B. And a B is nothing to be ashamed at Rensselaer in their entry, you know, our certain courses. And it's a shock to them. It's, you know, it kind of is a gut punch in many cases. And it's how they, but I think if they understand and put it in perspective and grow from it, and then understand that their classmates went through the same thing, it allows them the understanding, okay, I got it. Now what am I going to do moving forward? You know, in that type of standpoint.
Well, I appreciate so much about what you said, particularly the Navigating Rensselaer and Beyond. That's a 1 week program where students get to pick an area of interest right outside of their major. Maybe, like you said, it's whitewater rafting, skiing, or the many different things that you mentioned. And that's where, you know, from the start, you're going to build community. You're going to build some relationships with friends that might not necessarily be in your program or in your courses, but, you know, you spend that week with them, you're together as a community, and hopefully you build on those relationships throughout your 4 years or beyond of college at RPI. So again, we really appreciate that opportunity for students to come in right from the start and build community. So, John, in terms of your application review process, what key factors does RPI consider during the admissions process? And are there any common misconceptions that applicants might have? Any insights that you could provide in your overall review process would be greatly appreciated. Yeah. Obviously, you know, as you know, John, students want to know and the parents want to know what happens when we hit submit on those applications.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, I think the first thing, we're looking at the rigor of the curriculum the student's taking at the high school that they're at. You know, we, you know, every school's different, and we, you know, we have feeder schools and we have non-feeder schools, meaning we get school students from schools every year that are new to us. And so we do our research and we take a holistic approach. So we have an admission staff that travel nationally. That admission staff, so when a counselor from our office goes into a high school, 9 times out of 10, that counselor is going to be the one reviewing, being the first review of that file. Because once again, we believe in the relationship building with the high school, the college counselor, and the student. When we get into the process and we have early decision, early action, and regular, independent of when a student applies, the number one thing we want to look at is the rigor. We want to look at the rigor of the student, meaning is the student, what type of curriculum is the student taking, and what type of curriculum could they be taking at that high school? We understand nowadays, and particularly for first-gen students, they may be at high schools where they don't have all the rigor, you know, they're taking the best they can, but it may not, they may not have all the courses that, that other students have the opportunity to. Many of them will take courses at community college, you know, to make up, you know, on the math side or the science side. We take all that into consideration. So the first thing we do is we look at the rigor. In particular, coming out of COVID, we're looking at the trajectory. We're very realistic. Now, this will change. This conversation would be different 3-4 years from now, but we're dealing with students who entered high school and their freshman year or their sophomore, it could have been during the COVID. And everybody had a different experience. Every school had different technology weaknesses and gaps. So we're taking that in. So we're really looking at the trajectory that the student has taken in recent. We're looking at interest the student has. You know, we don't want everybody to be the best at solving the Rubik's Cube. You know, we're looking at, you know, uniqueness, like I talk about, you know, what are you going to bring to the institute socially outside of the classroom, as, you know, whether it be a student government leader, maybe you design race cars, maybe you design rockets, maybe you've created with some of your high school classmates, you have a patent pending for something unique. Really, what we want is not cookie cutter. We want students to be honest about what their passions are. Don't go just do something because an advisor told you you need to have it on your resume or your CV or your application. We can read through that, and most schools can. We can see it in your essay. Think about how you're going to talk about your essay. Talk about your personal experience. Maybe your life experience comes through in that essay, because that's, we do read them. We really do read them. And usually the first reader is going back to the person who was the person that knows that high school and understands the background. And then that person goes to their committee and talks about the student in that manner, from that standpoint. I think visiting, well, I will say this, I think visiting campus is important. And the reason I think it's important is it's something, I know finances can come into it, but the sooner you can visit a campus, and if you can visit a campus prior to applying, you may be able to touch on attributes you see on campus that are why you want to come, that why you can be at Rensselaer, what's your passion and what you saw coming through. Oh, you know, the quantum computer. Oh, you know, when I was on campus, I found out you have this club. And then I emailed the head of that club. And I'm thinking, you know, what I was really excited about is that in my freshman year, I could participate. I'll use a quick example. You know, our school newspaper, you can be a reporter at the Polytechnic. You can be a reporter first semester. Hmm. If that's what you want. Now, you're going to be mentored. You're going to be mentored with a senior, but you can jump in and you can have a byline in the paper. I got interviewed by one of the freshmen. The funny thing is I recognized him because he went to one of my events, and I joked, I go, you remember me, right? He goes, yeah, I remember you. I said, okay. You know, from that standpoint. So those are the opportunities. Obviously we're just want to let everyone know we're test optional for next year. I can't tell you where we're going to be 2 years from now. Here's what I would say. If we will use the scores, ACT or SAT, if you submit them. So you can look at the national, most college counselors in the high school setting have where the median is and from that. If we do not think of it this way, if we do not get those scores, then we're going to weight more heavily on the curriculum, how you did in high school, and other aspects from that standpoint. So it just makes sense that if you're a good test taker, which a lot of our students are, so put in perspective, I think the national average is about 35% submit SAT. This year, this incoming freshman class was 62. So it puts in perspective. And I think Carnegie Mellon, you may talk to, I think Carnegie Mellon's probably around the same. That's what I've heard.
It is. We actually just did an interview.
So students, you know, my point to students and families out there, if you have a son or daughter and their friend is going to X school and they're not submitting, that doesn't mean that's necessarily what you need to do.
Right.
You need to take a step back. You need to consult with your college counselor. You need to look at the scores and say, you know, well, maybe we should be submitting because my son or daughter does well in that, and it will help their profile, you know, from that standpoint.
Well, I appreciate you talking about the test optional nature, not only of RPI, but of all schools. And it's very simple. If you have scores that are going to help your overall application, submit. Be mindful of the fact that the mid 50%, it's skewed nowadays because only students that are scoring well are submitting. So it's probably a little higher than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, what have you. But I appreciate you also mentioning the fact that if you don't submit scores, then obviously other parts of the overall application get weighted heavier. You talked about visits, and I like what you were saying because, you know, for me, the way I read what you were saying is that when you visit, you gain information that frankly is not so easily learned by listening to a podcast episode or by even attending virtual events necessarily or reviewing the RPI website. You might learn firsthand about the quantum computer. You might meet someone who is the president of that club, and perhaps you could use what you learned in, let's say, a supplemental essay, where I believe that a big piece of the supplemental is to demonstrate your understanding of why, in this case, you would want to be at RPI. And so if you're on campus and you're able to talk about the quantum computer, maybe you met, you know, the editor of the newspaper, and you're able to explain the conversation, how you see yourself there, why you see yourself there, how you see yourself contributing, I think that might help with the supplemental. Would you agree with that, John?
Oh, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to add, and I say this to parents is, and it really goes to parents, I understand that either during spring break or in the summer, you're trying to fit a lot in, but don't make the college visit the amazing race, because it's all going to get blurred, you know? And absolutely. So try to breathe through it. And what I mean by that is, okay, you don't have to spend 2 days on campus, but enjoy the campus, walk around outside of the tour. I don't care where you're looking at, Rensselaer, anywhere else. See what's in the surrounding environment. Can you see yourself? Is that a comfort level? Go downtown to eat. You know, you can eat on campus, but, you know, 5 minute drive or a walk, what's reasonable? Because think about, okay, how far is, if I'm coming from California or Chicago, if you're Troy, how far is the airport? You know, right. Do they have Uber and Lyft? You know, those right. type of things that I'm used to. The other thing followed up with that is once you visit, don't just say that, you know, if you, you know, it, I look at, you know, it's kind of like a house. You're narrowing, my experience is college students narrow the search when they visit. But then the second visit, don't just do the same old, meaning the same tour, the same thing. Like at Rensselaer, we encourage students to sit and visit classes. You know, so, and that's not great. The parents of the students, you know, and so, you know, and many times let the parents roam around campus and see what they like, the library, you know, that, but the students can visit campus. So now, if before you apply, or even right after you apply, like right now, you know, we have hundreds of students this month sitting in on classes. And many of them didn't realize they could until they had a conversation with our counselor. Look, I visited, what else can I do? Well, would you like to sit down on a class? Now, it may not be perfect. It may not be the exact class, but you say, oh, I need to come on Monday at 10 o'clock. Okay, here are the class offerings. And at least in Rensselaer, our professors love to see the student, you know, love in class. And then the other thing you want the admissions office to do is verify, you know, and they'll do this, make sure there's not a quiz or something. That's a real class. You know, that's no one wants to go through a quiz. But I think that's another great opportunity, you know, in looking at separating out what you like and don't like in regards to a particular institution or comfort. It's more comfort level and fit. I'm a big believer in fit. And what we're trying to do is see if the school is the right fit for the student.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate you mentioning the fact that you allow through the admissions office for students, prospective students, to actually attend the class. And again, I would imagine that a student that writes in their supplemental, for example, that they attended a specific class with a specific professor, what their impressions were, what they liked, how they see themselves there. Mm-hmm. I think that a supplemental essay like that is a lot stronger than someone that just says, look, I've played with Legos since I was a little kid. And I always knew I wanted to be an engineer.
Right.
What would you say about that, John?
No, absolutely. Anytime you can personalize why you're applying to a certain school, it will get the attention of those reading the application.
Right. Absolutely. No, and I appreciate that. And when talking about your overall application review, one of the things that you talked about, obviously, is the rigor, right? You're looking at rigor. And you mentioned within the context of the student's high school, you recognize that every high school is different. But you want to see, based on what was available to the students, how they challenged themselves and how they built ramps. And you use the word trajectory over 4 years, which I think is great. So digging a little deeper in terms of your application review, John, do you use the student's high school GPA as indicated on their transcript, or do you recalculate the GPA using your own metrics? And if so, what do you look at from a student's academic record, and how do you evaluate them?
So we recalculate, and you know, but not to the extremes. What we're really looking at is, you know, we look at the calc and physics. That's going to be an important aspect. Now, it can depend on major. 65% of our students are going into engineering and science, so that would be a factor when we're recalculating. We're weighting the classes. We won't just use the GPA because it matters what going back to rigor, you know, going back and looking at the strength of the coursework. We don't find, and it doesn't really surprise the students when we look at where our GPA calculates into what they thought they would land. So we don't have a lot of push, you know, it's pretty transparent from that standpoint.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you talked about 65% of your students are going into engineering or science. And so obviously courses like physics and calculus are really important. So students, be mindful of that. If there's an intended major, they obviously want to see the work that you took in your high school, again, based on what was available to you. But did you challenge yourself? Did you build ramps? Did you set that foundation so that when you go to a school like RPI, you're showing the admissions representatives that you'll be able to handle the work once you're on their campus? So again, we appreciate that. And John, I know that for your architecture and music programs, as you mentioned earlier, students must submit portfolios as part of their overall application. What advice can you share in terms of submitting a portfolio that best represents the student's potential?
Our dean of our architecture is phenomenal, Dean Evan Douglas, and he will tell you the expectations. They're not expecting you to build the next super skyscraper. You know, the expectation is they want to see where your creativity is. They want to see where your aptitude is in regards to what you're looking to come into. The School of Architecture with. Many of our students will bring their portfolios to one of our open houses. We do two open houses, usually one in October and one in November. And they give you an idea of the attention. The departments will review them right there. Look at them. Doesn't mean you're getting a thumbs up, thumbs down, but it becomes part of your overall application. And so I would just demonstrate, you know, it kind of is almost like an essay, but in a portfolio manner, of what you're going to bring to the School of Architecture, why you want to do it, where your skill set is, and where you're going to look to learn from. You know, from that standpoint, combined with your academics, your academic pursuits, GPA-wise, et cetera.
Well, we appreciate that. And obviously, the portfolio expectations, students, they want to see your aptitude, your creativity. So again, just be mindful of that. And if you do visit with a rep and you have a follow-up question, that's always a good question to ask, whether it's, you know, a representative that visits your high school, or you see them at a college fair, or if you're fortunate enough to be on campus. Now, I know that we talked a lot about the supplemental essays, but I just wanted to go back to that for a second, John. Yeah. How many supplemental questions do you ask for? And again, what are you trying to learn from potential students' responses based on those supplementals?
We just have one essay question, but there are six topics they can decide from, you know, from that standpoint. And I think, you know, one of the things with the Supreme Court decision is an area that's become very popular for all students is describing their lived experience. Mm-hmm. And that allows the admissions office to understand the background the student's coming from, at the same time, why they feel Rensselaer fits into where they want to go and how that their background they're coming in with will fit into Rensselaer from that standpoint.
Understood. And thank you so much. And I know we touched upon it earlier in terms of reviewing students based on the context of what was available to them in their high school. But when reviewing applications from all of these different high schools, where some might have as much as 30 advanced placement mm-hmm. courses and others perhaps have half, maybe they have restrictions on how many you can take sure. in junior and senior year and what have you. So what does it look like? I know that you evaluate students based on the context of their high school, but is anybody at a disadvantage coming from these different schools?
I think it depends where you're applying. And I will say, because we take a holistic approach, and the first reviewer is also the person that's responsible for that we call it a territory, but let's say region of the country. They know those schools. And they what their job is, when we look at their job of any regional, of anybody that is a counselor and they're handling a region, is to educate your fellow colleagues of what's going on at that school, how this student stands up at that school. And we have data that we look at, maybe if we've taken students from school like that and how they've done. We can go back and look at how they've done, how they came in with, and then we do, and in particular nowadays, we look at the recommendations from a counselor because we know that counselor and they know us. And from that standpoint, there are some disadvantages. I think it would be disingenuous not to say that there are students that have to do more and have to work, you know, mm-hmm. harder. I have students where the parent has said, okay, in the afternoon, I've worked it out with the school. They go to this community college 15 minutes down the road. He takes a bus or she takes a bus, you know, and they do their math courses and science courses there because they don't have AP at right. the high school. Or my right. son or daughter went as high as they could go in their junior year from that standpoint. And so we take that into account. We also appreciate that, you know, the perseverance that takes for a young person to do that tells us that that's a person that really wants to improve themselves. And really wants to, you know, it will bring that to wherever they're going to school. And that's going to be a great student to have on campus. So we do take that into consideration. We also, you know, the student, we look at the AP credits. We allow students to bring in up to 32 AP credits. Wow. And I think that's important because in the times of where we hear a lot about student debt and loans, and our outcomes are phenomenal. We can talk about that later. But we understand that. So, you know, let's be candid. The average student is not bringing in 32 AP credits. The average right. student's probably bringing in 16 to 18. Well, what mm-hmm. does 16 to 18 do? That's a semester.
Right.
So when we talked about the accelerated program, we have students who can do that BS, MS, MBA, well, BS, MS in 4.5 years.
Wow.
They could do a BS, MBA, which is another semester, in 5 years. Why? Because they took care of a lot of their electives via the AP credits. So I think parents need to also look at AP credits as a potential, it's not financial aid per se, but you can utilize it in that way because it's courses your son or daughter is not going to have to take on campus and can accelerate their time through undergrad. And in our case, we find students don't want to leave in 3 years, 3.5 years. They see the value add of putting on the master's degree. And if the financial aid, in our case, at Rensselaer is going to cover that to a point, you know, 50% scholarship, that's a value add.
Well, I appreciate that. And I love the way you talked about the fact that you would accept up to 32 AP credits, not the average, of course, but certainly it's good for students and parents to hear that as, look, if you're able to save a semester or whatever it is, that's certainly one way to help with the financial need of many families out there, obviously. I also love how you talked about the student that goes to a school that perhaps doesn't offer as many AP or advanced programs. And so, you know, they're doing everything they can throughout high school. They're taking a dual enrollment course where they're yep. actually physically going to the community college in the neighborhood to show that they're serious about their academics, which is terrific. And lastly, I just want to repeat it because you talked about the importance of the relationships that your admission staff develops with the school counselors at all of the different high schools, those high schools that are within their region, and the fact that you look at students from a particular high school. I'm sure you look at, you know, their overall profile, how they perform at RPI to help you determine, you know, how future students may do on your campus. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. So put in perspective, we visit between 1,400 high schools and fairs a year. And we look at having relationships. We want, you know, my staff, we have relationships. That's how we treat it with these college counselors. We do everything in our power to keep them informed of everything going on. We want them calling us during the process. So they have a question, they got a particular student that has a particular question. We want them literally emailing us or calling us personally, not going to a generic email, if you will.
Right.
And then, but nowadays, let's be candid, compared to when I was in school and you're in school, these counselors know how their past students are doing via social media.
Right.
They know they're tracking these kids. They'll follow them on Instagram. They'll follow them on other, you know, Facebook, or the kids aren't really using that, but other mechanisms. They'll say like, oh, you know, because I've gone to these schools. I'm going to a fair on Thursday night. It'll be the second. I go to this fair every year because in New York. And the counselor like, oh, so-and-so is doing so well. You know, I talked to his mom, maybe his brother's in school. He's loving it there. Or I feed him. You know, a lot of these kids now are using LinkedIn. You know, our kids will use LinkedIn. And so even if they're doing their, you know, they did the race car club, won a competition, their guidance counselor is seeing that. Well, the student is not posting that they won the race car club, but they're not having a good time at the school, in my experience. So they're taking all that in. They're like, oh, and I think what we want to, you know, talk to the counselors about is we don't spin them. You know, we're going to be candid because we want it to be the right fit.
Right.
And Rensselaer, like any school, is not for everyone. And we're looking for the students that they have at their school because they know their students better than we do. They're there with them every day. They're talking with them. They know their parents. They know the backgrounds. We want the students that are the right fit. And that's why we're very conscious about making in-person visits,
right?
You know, going to high schools. We do events with guidance counselors. We invite them to campus. We have an event this week where with a collection of other schools where we'll have about 40 guidance counselors around the country coming to visit our campus.
And fantastic.
Yeah, that's all intentional.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, you talk about the relationships and how your staff goes to, I think you said 1,400 fairs a year or 1,400 high schools, which is amazing.
Right.
But again, it emphasizes the importance of relationships. I want to give a big shout out to all of the school counselors that, again, your staff makes relationships with. They are there to represent their students. If they know of a kid that RPI is the right fit for, I'm sure they are reaching out to you. They're calling you, putting that child on the radar. And it's also a message to students and the parents listening to this conversation that it really is important for you to also make that relationship with your school counselor. Let them know what your interests are, what your aspirations are, so that they can help you, whether it's RPI or some other school. Again, you talked about it a lot, John. Those relationships on every level are so important.
Absolutely.
So how does RPI support students in their career development? And can you highlight the strength of the alumni network in helping graduates succeed in their respective fields?
Sure. So in the career, we have what's called our CCPD, Center for Career Placement and Development. So our CCPD office works with students all the way through. So I'm going to say something right now to the students and families. Every student needs to put their hand up when they get to campus, investigate this area, go to the career fairs. We have two career fairs a year that are phenomenal. What we do is we have what's called the ARCH program. The ARCH program is where students stay on campus in their junior year. When the junior year begins, they stay on campus starting in May, at the end of May, after graduation, and stay all the way through August. And that's the beginning of their junior year, where they're with their fellow colleagues, classmates. They clustered on campus. They're taking a full curriculum. Financial aid's all in. It's the same. Then, in either the fall or spring term, they do an away experience. And the away experience can be a co-op, an internship, a study away out of the country, starting a new, you know, independent learning experience. I'll touch on the co-op. So a lot of our students, obviously, the difference is, I'll get a question a lot, the difference between a co-op and an internship. Co-op is between 26 and 32 weeks. So think of it as half a year. And what companies are doing is they're bringing you into a project setting where they need a young, high caliber person that they can give a signed project to. They also pay incredibly well. So our co-op students are averaging for that time frame salaries between $32,000 and $40,000.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, while they're doing that, they're not paying tuition because they're not taking classes. So we talked about the student loans and all that. That can go all to offset any expenses they may have. Now, some students, if they get a job at Tesla, they get a job in a co-op, or they do an internship. And an internship is usually 8 to 12 weeks. And whether they do an internship, and it's usually not paid as much, but usually around $25 an hour, $30 an hour, still pretty solid. So while students are doing these experiences, they could be living at home, which obviously keeps costs down. They could be living remotely. And some of these organizations like Facebook, they put students up, you know, it's part of the deal, or somewhere in between. Maybe you're living with your roommate in a different part of the country because he or she is doing the same experience as you are, or maybe you, so from that standpoint, what we are looking for is what we have found in our data is students at Rensselaer. So we've seen a major, since the Arch program has been around 7 years, and we've seen a major uptick in students not only doing one internship or co-op, but two, because they may do one their junior, they may want to do one the year before or the year after. The data nationally, I think it was in a Wall Street Journal, and it's in line with us, is the students that partake in more off-campus experiences that are career-driven are going to have better outcomes, better career trajectory, and have a better attitude about their experience at their institute. And so what we've really pushed over the last few years is what was surprising is the number of students who weren't doing internships or co-ops. It was still high, but it wasn't as high as we thought it should be. And now we have more students partaking in this, and thus they're entering the job. They are showcasing themselves to future employers or potential employers. The other thing that people underestimate is there's nothing better than doing an internship and realizing you do not want to work for that company or do that job, because you'd rather learn that your sophomore year at Rensselaer than the first year out of Rensselaer.
Right.
And so, but if you do that as a sophomore, then you can pivot and work with the CCPD office or work with your department, going back to faculty and say, you know, I did this experience. Not the worst thing I've done, but not what I want to do with my career. What do you think? Here's my skill set. Here's where I'm interesting. I talked to Dr. So-and-so. They said I'm really strong in this area. What are some other opportunities? And we have platforms that have 9 to 12,000 opportunities nationwide, and then you zero those down. So going back to our alumni, we have, I believe, 110,000 living alumni. And they're, they're throughout the country. And they are very active, and they love hiring Rensselaer students, either as interns, co-ops, or at, you know, or for first-time job. Many of them will be part of our career fair, meaning they come back, they represent the companies when they come to our career fair, because, and going back to relationships, it's not unusual for me to, I know some of these alums, they'll email me, hey, I'm going to be on campus for the career fair. You want to do drinks after the event? You want to go to lunch and to catch up with them after they've met? So I know who they are, and they're, you know, and many of them will tell you that you don't have enough students, you know, to fit in to what we need from that standpoint. And the other thing I would encourage is many times freshmen, you know, they hang out with other freshmen, and which is natural. And they think, oh, I don't need to go to the career fair. I would go to the career fair, see how it rolls, see what goes on, see how they dress, see how they talk. Maybe you ask a student, would you mind if I took a, you know, quick, could I link in with you to see your CV if you have it online? Could I take a quick picture of your CV so I know then what I need to be working on my side, and then go to the career service office and say, look, you know, I met this senior, I know this junior, and he's looking at these companies. That sounds of an interest to me. What do I need to do to be prepared to put myself in that setting? The other thing is, if you're dying to work, like, this is not going to be a surprise. A lot of the students at Rensselaer and other schools, SpaceX is very popular because of everything going on. And we have aerospace engineering now and aeronautical engineering, which is very unusual. So we're right in that. Our students are right in that alleyway, if you will, going in that trajectory. Two things. One, if that's your goal, you better know what the time frame is with SpaceX looking for interns and co-ops, not industry-wise, but what there is. Secondly, if you know it's that popular, what are some other companies that maybe do business with SpaceX that are smaller scale that you could have an opportunity with that our alums may know people at and get in? And keep in mind, chances are if the company's smaller, may pay a little less, may pay the same, but what experience are you getting compared to going to a big conglomerate?
Right.
Just take that into consideration.
Right. And it comes down to those relationships that you talked about earlier and maximizing that alumni network.
Absolutely.
What, you know, my biggest takeaway from all of it is, as your students are coming in, again, you have that navigating Rensselaer and beyond, right? That's to help them build community, right, to come onto your campus. And from that all the way to your CCPD or your Center for Career Placement and Development, it really sounds like you're very mindful of bringing the students in, having them build their networks of friends, but also having all of these co-op programs, internship programs in place to help them ultimately find a career or a job, if you will, once they graduate. So I think that's really impressive in terms of all of the supports that you have for your students. And speaking of supports, what support services do you offer in terms of helping students succeed academically once they're on your campus? There are students that may have had an IEP mm-hmm. while in high school, but I mean, for all students, what's there in terms of supports to help them academically?
So every school has academic hubs, and mm-hmm. those academic hubs have professionals there that are used to working with students across all the majors within the schools that lays out for them the best trajectory for taking the classes they need to take, when they need to take them. That's a good time. You say, well, I'm thinking of a minor, or I'm thinking of doing the accelerated program. And that will adjust the curriculum you're taking. Or here's what I want to do. I know I want to do my away term in the fall, not the spring. How do we make sure my course load is adjusted effectively? So I'm not, because you never want to take all your hard courses in your last semester. Hmm. And you never want to take them. You want to have a flexibility throughout the curriculum so it's even all the way through. Mm-hmm. And you work for the academic side and the hubs, what we call our academic hubs, and they know it better. And also if there's any if there's a case in point, if there's a class you've got to be in and they say it's filled, that hub person can work with the faculty to see if there's maybe another spot in there because it's so important. Right. You know, they, in essence, they lobby for the student, and we usually don't have problems like that, you know, from that standpoint. So those are kind of the trajectories from that standpoint of working with the academic hubs. And then we talked about the peer tutoring. We also have mental wellness on campus. We have a physician on campus. We have a doctor for the university that's on campus. And so across the board, we are constantly concerned about both the academic well-being of the student, the mental well-being of the student, and the social well-being of the student.
Well, we appreciate it. And John, you've been awesome. This has been truly a great conversation, really comprehensive understanding of what RPI has to offer, not only in your classrooms, but beyond. Before I get to the last question, John, I just want to ask, is there a question that I didn't bring up or a topic that just didn't come up that you'd like to leave with us now?
Yeah, I think one thing I'd like to talk about is athletics.
Sure.
we're unique. You know, many people out there may know we have Division I men's and women's hockey. And, you know, hockey, we have a 5,000 seat hockey arena. We're in the ECAC, wow, which is the conference you see on the Frozen Four, usually one team representing. But we have 23 overall athletic teams. 21 of them are actually Division III. And wow, Division III is non-scholarship. But that doesn't mean we're highly competitive. Right now, our men's lacrosse team is number 2 in the country.
Wow.
Our men's football, our football team has gone to 2 Elite Eights in the last 5 years. Our women's softball team is nationally ranked right now. I could go on and on. So we're highly competitive. Also, our athletic facilities, while we're D3, they have the feel of a low D1, like a Patriot League, for those of you with the Bucknells, the Lehighs, feel for students to doing that. And the message I want to get out is, just because you're not Division I athlete does not mean you're not highly competitive and highly really good at what you do. And our coaches recruit like crazy. And we bring in some incredible talent, both academically and obviously athletically, as do a lot of other Division III schools. So the D3 recruitment experience, while it's non-scholarship, is still highly competitive. And you have coaches that are going for, once again, they're going for the right fit, both academically and athletically. And so don't underestimate the opportunities that are there for students. And quick story, I was in Washington, D.C. at a Fairfield Inn having breakfast, and I wore my little RPI jacket. Parent came across the way, sat down, and said, did you go there? And I said, no, I oversee admissions financial aid. And he like perked up. He goes, my daughter is a sophomore from Birmingham, Alabama, and is seriously considering playing soccer at Rensselaer. I'm like, that's awesome. And so long story short, she visited campus. Going back to the visit, she visited campus in April and she's working with the coaches. I don't get involved that's in great. That. I'm worried about the academic side and all that. But once again, it's about relationship building and making, I would say to the students and families out there, if athletics is a component you want to be part of your DNA when you go to a school, and maybe you can't play at Division I, where there's nothing wrong with that, but you still want to have that outside a club. You want to be on an NCAA team that's highly competitive. Look at athletic programs such as Rensselaer and other high caliber Division III. And I think it will fill the void of a lot of things you're looking for. And then keep in context with, well, because you're not on scholarship, the athletic program doesn't dictate where your major is going to be, what classes you're going to take. You're dictating that because you're on academic or need-based scholarship outside of athletics. So you have more control over your career trajectory that standpoint than maybe sometimes going to a Division I school where certain programs are not going to let students. There are a number of schools in the Division I side where it's very hard to major in engineering because of the classes.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And just as a quick follow-up, you know, and I think you touched upon it again, but what is the difference in terms of a prospective student athlete in terms of the application review process, right? I mean, they're going to apply, you're checking the academics, but in other words, do you work closely with the coaches or is that separate?
We have a complete firewall. So we have zero. So we have an athletic liaison, but he does not review files of any student athlete.
Understood.
And so they have the admissions and it's no different than a student being a musician, a student having a patent pending. And by the way, we do have patent IP offices on campus where students, you talked about that earlier, from that standpoint. So there is no advantage. I'm going to be completely honest and maybe disappointing. There is no advantage from the admission standpoint to be a student athlete, in both admission wise or financial aid wise at the Division III level. Those are the downsides. There is no athletic scholarship. The advantages are you're a true student. The student comes before the athlete and, you know, that the well-being academically and such is what's going to take lead in any student on campus. That's in the athletic department. Plus, I will say this, the athletic departments have their own tutors, you know, so teams have their own tutors in addition to the other. There's additional support mechanisms in place because the teams do travel and there's a lot of practice and that goes into place.
Well, that's terrific. And again, John, I can't thank you enough. You've given so many great pieces of advice. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which ironically is going to ask you to give us your top three pieces of advice for all the students and the parents out there getting ready for the college admissions process.
Sure. First of all, take a breath. You're going to have a lot of decisions in life. This is one of them. It's important, but it's not the only major decision. There are a lot of fantastic universities and colleges out there. I think Rensselaer is one of them, but there are a lot. What you want to do is do as much research as you can. But I really believe this. The student has to take the lead. The student has to take the lead because you're not going where the parents want you to go. You're going where the student should want to go. Understand and look, we live in a time where colleges are expensive and everybody comes from different household financial. Understand what the profile looks like for a student going in and have an understanding of what the financial profile may look like for students and their financial aid. And all that information is available from that standpoint. But have some level of confidence. Don't undershoot because someone's telling you, oh, that's a hard place or you can't get in. Just do your own research, talk to your college counselor and make your own decision. You know, from that standpoint, go through the process, visit as early as you can. The other thing I say is, okay, let's say someone listening to your show is in Denver, Colorado, and it may be hard for them to come to the East Coast. Well, maybe they should look at some schools in that area. They may not want to go there, but size and scope. Is the University of Colorado, do I fit in? Because the University of Colorado is much like a lot of other big universities. Is this my, you know, what size are the classes? What are the feel like? What's the experience like? Or there are other smaller size schools that I can take a tour on. You're like, you know, I'm not interested in the school, but I like that size. I like that fit. And then that will help your parents kind of direct in regards to where we should be looking, narrow it down. The other thing for parents, I encourage them, as many of people listening, we're getting out of the COVID world. We're doing more business travel or social travel. Take your son or daughter with you if you're going somewhere where there's a school or university that might be. Maybe you're going to a business meeting. They can go make a visit on their own time. And then you've killed two birds with one stone. And yeah, you can't maybe be on the visit, but if they really like the place, trust me, they're going to say, Mom, Dad, you can, let's go take a look. I want to show you some things at X school, you know, or take an extra day. If you're in New York, like we're 160 miles from New York City, 170 miles from Boston. Someone doing business there, maybe they take an extra day, drive on over, take a look at campus and fly on out, you know, that night. And that way they've shaved a little time and gotten a little more educated about the whole process from that standpoint. If you have brothers or sisters, bring them on the trip. It will help them. It will educate them the next round. And then once you go through the admissions process, understand, you know, go to as many sessions as you can go to the events. And then as you go into the yielding process, what we call the yielding process, students call the decision process, take everything into consideration and just go with what feels the right fit, both academically, financially, emotionally, and go from there with it. And look, there are a lot of good schools and most of the students, especially the ones that come to Rensselaer, are phenomenal and they are going to have great options. And, you know, there isn't one size that fits all. And so don't get into the popularity game. And every school, every high school has a hot school. You know, I don't worry. I don't get into that because those come and go.
Well, we appreciate it. And again, John, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I'm really happy as I know it's going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate through the process. I do hope to have you again.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time today, man. You were awesome.
Thanks, John. Take care. Thank you for the opportunity.
Our pleasure. And to everyone out there, good luck with the college search. Take care, everyone, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.